Pro Football Week, the Chicago podcast is back. What's up, everyone? Thanks for being with us. We haven't chatted with you in a hot minute here. Haven't had a chance to recap the draft, and we're really excited to do so. Joined, as always, by Bob Laguerre, my partner in crime. I am Arthur Arkish. We'll be joined later in the podcast by Hub Arkish as well. But, Bob, you are leading off, and just before we kind of dive in, your very general thoughts on what the Bears accomplished in a pretty exciting draft, I think.
Well, they did, I thought, a very good job of addressing needs. Maybe waited a little bit too long to get an edge rusher that they desperately need. But if you look around the league, most grades that I've seen from the experts, so to say, have given the Bears at least a B. I saw a lot of B pluses, even an A and an A minus. But my initial grade would have been a B. Like I said, they did a good job of addressing needs. But when you're a team coming off four seasons of double-digit losses, you've got a lot of needs, so it's easier to address them. People think maybe they went a little heavy on the inside linebacker. I don't think that was a mistake. Danny Trevathan, great player, long injury history. Nick Kwiatkowski, guy who has gotten a lot of experience playing when all the guys were hurt, and I think is a good player. But Roquan Smith, I think, is a great player who steps in day one and is an impact player as a rookie.
Yeah, we're in agreement on that, Bob. My favorite first-round draft choice by Ryan Pace, and I don't even think it's close, Roquan Smith. I think we saw a departure from Pace's strategy a little bit. He's always aimed for the high ceilings and the uber athletes, if you will, and certainly he landed that in Roquan Smith, but he also got already a great football player, and I don't know if we can necessarily say the same thing for guys like Kevin White and Leonard Floyd and Mitch Trubisky. So also in agreement with you, and I'll leave the pronunciation to you, but let's let the listeners know. Give me the fourth rounder's pronunciation first so I can talk a little more inside linebacker, Bob.
All right, it's Joel Iabuniwe. And it took me about 15 tries to get that right, and I still can't spell it right, but I can usually pronounce it.
Did you guys have any other, on the Bears beat, any other guys you had to worry about that was going to take a while to get the spelling straight? I know this one will take a minute at least.
No, the other ones are pretty basic. You got a Smith, a Miller, a Daniel. So, yeah, it should be, you know, going to be a lot tougher for Jeff Joniak than it is for us, because we just have to spell it like usually.
Well, we know that Jeff Joniak, his job was too easy before, so he'll need a little work and a little bit of polishing in this regard. No problem there. But look, so I'm with you. I think, A, Bob, we see the importance of the inside linebacker position in Vic Fangio's defenses historically. Of course, in San Francisco, you go back to the New Orleans and the Dome Patrol. I mean, of course, this is he'll be the first to tell you that it's the D-line that's sort of the engine of his defense. But a lot of the horsepower and a lot of what happens behind them is critical as well. And I think we're in absolute agreement. Trevathan can be a really good player. He has not been the most reliable. And Nick Kwiatkowski, I mean, maybe you'll know off the top of your head, how does his draft slot compare to this newcomer? They're pretty much the same, I think. And when you're drafting there in the fourth round, you're frankly looking for a special team stud. And sometimes you find guys that develop into big-time defensive contributors. I think in a best-case scenario, the hope is that Ryan Pace and Matt Nagy and Vic Fangio, of course, found their long-time sort of inside linebacker battery now with these two draft picks if things go according to plan.
Yeah, I think if these guys work out, and as you mentioned, Iabuniwe is definitely a guy who is going to be an impact player on special teams right away.
Yep.
But this was a position that had literally no depth, and now they've got quality starters and some quality depth. So they turned what could have been a real trouble area into what may very well be a team strength this year.
All right, so I'm shying away from trying to pronounce it, but the Western Kentucky linebacker went 115 overall a couple years ago. Nick Kwiatkowski was number 113. So always interesting to kind of keep those things in the right context as we look at this. What about the guys on days one and two, Bob? We mentioned Roquan there briefly. Your thoughts on how James Daniels and Anthony Miller, and we'll get into the linebackers even more, of course, but your thoughts about where Daniels and Miller sort of slot in early in their Bears careers and what reasonable expectations will be for them in those slots.
Well, Daniels was mostly a center at Iowa and was a very good center. You know, guys that come out of Iowa because of Coach Kirk Ferentz, are always technically sound. You know, that they don't miss assignments. They're smart. And this guy certainly fits into that mold. Very smart guy, very technically sound. The one thing about the Iowa linemen is they have a tendency to be a little small as NFL standards go. And this guy is the same, a little bit undersized. If you're going to move him to guard, which is the Bears' ideal or initial plan for him, they're going to start him at guard, cross-train him at center, which shouldn't be too difficult because he played it for 4 years. You know, I don't know if this guy's as technically sound and is fundamentally sound, if that's enough to offset the lack of strength and the lack of size. He's 6'4", 306. That's good size for a center. Not, I mean, it's below normal for a guard. So you have to be concerned about that. They seem confident. And more importantly, Harry Hiestand is confident this guy can make the move. And there isn't a better offensive line coach in the country than Harry Hiestand. So if he signs off on a guy, I got to think he can play. And there's always the option, if it doesn't work out, he can move back to center because Cody Whitehair can switch out the guard. Ideally, the Bears would love for Whitehair to remain at center just for the sake of the fact that he worked with Mitch Trubisky last year. And that exchange is important between the center and the quarterback. And it went pretty seamlessly once Trubisky became the starter. So ideally, they want to keep that together with Whitehair being the center. And we'll see how it goes. There's definitely a need at guard. There's a gaping hole at left guard since Josh Sitton left. So Daniels will have every opportunity to win that job. And if he does, if he steps in and is a day one starter, you know, maybe this is an A or an A-minus draft for the Bears.
Bob, you raise a great point there in kind of mentioning Harry Hiestand. I want to make sure he doesn't get lost in this because the pick wasn't Quentin Nelson and it wasn't Mike McGlinchey, and we all kind of worked ourselves up into a potential Notre Dame fervor there in reuniting those guys. But James Daniels was the number one center on Greg Gabriel's draft board. I know he was on many draft boards, and the fact that he was available at 39 overall I think was directly related to maybe a slight concern with his knee. There was a medical recheck issue, and we can get into that a little bit more too, because I think there are some durability concerns here with this draft class, and I'll be curious to hear your opinion on you know, whether Ryan Pace is gambling or whether you like to see that. But I just think it's important to mention that after the hiring of Harry Hiestand was so, you know, universally praised, now you give him a top prospect and maybe a bit of a project too, since you're talking about switching positions, but you're kind of, you know, you're kind of showing your trust not only in the second rounder, but in that hire you made in Hiestand. So I like it a lot. Let me ask you though, real quick, does the fact that, you know, someone who was a finalist for some of the top O-line awards in the country and someone who had so much success at center, Bob, when you heard Ryan Pace say last week that the initial plan was to move him to guard, did the pick lose some of its luster for you? Were you kind of, was that encouraging to hear that they weren't going to mess with Cody Whitehair? What was the first thing going through your head when you heard the Bears' initial plan for Daniels?
You know what? It didn't bother me only because of Cody Whitehair's versatility. Yeah. The guy had played every O-line position except center in college, stepped in a week before the start of his rookie season, started all 16 games as a rookie, all 16 games last year. And I don't, you know, I can't say if he's a better guard or a center, but I know the guy is capable of playing both and playing at a high level. So in that regard, I feel I'm not concerned at all about the Daniels pick because you had that versatility with Cody Whitehair. So, you know, I think that's, however it works out, if he steps in at guard and can handle that, great. If he has to move back to center, that's doable. Those positions aren't necessarily interchangeable, but they're similar enough. And Daniels actually did play a little bit of guard at Iowa. So I don't think that's going to be a problem going forward. And let's not forget the other second round pick, Anthony Miller, who's the wide receiver from Memphis and put up just amazing numbers in the last 2 years. Got knocked a little bit because he didn't run a real sophisticated route tree at Memphis, and he's not overly big. He's 5'11", maybe 5'11 and a half, about 200 pounds. Not blazing fast, but if you look at the production, it's hard not to imagine this guy coming in and making an impact right away. 32 touchdowns the last 2 years, almost 2,900 receiving yards. almost 200 catches. I think this guy, especially with the uncertainty over Allen Robinson coming off the ACL, this guy's going to get a ton of chances in training camp and in the preseason, and I think he's going to be – I'm not going to say he's going to be a day-one starter, but I think he's going to be a day-one contributor.
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt about it. I think when you're – you know, let's remember the Bears gave up a 2019 second-rounder. They didn't have a third-round pick after making the Daniels selection in round two, and obviously were in love with Miller enough that they wanted to send that second-round pick for next year to New England in order to move back into the second round, 51st overall for Anthony Miller. You don't make those types of moves unless you have a very defined vision and plan for him early on. So I'm in total agreement, Bob. I went back and forth a little bit on this pick, only the value of it. And I said at the time and have kind of said repeatedly on Twitter, Anthony Miller was one of my favorite players in this entire draft. I just think he's a dude. He's a guy who loves the spotlight and loves playing against the best competition and loves being the guy in the offense. So I think that that's exciting, and he is going to be a playmaker for the Bears. I think schematically he fits very well with what they're going to want to do, some of his run after the catch skills and other things he's going to be able to do. I did think they gave up quite a bit to get him, obviously. And of course, Bob, they have spent so much at the wide receiver position this offseason. And I think that's kind of a trend with Ryan Pace. Sometimes maybe we see him overcompensate. Think about what he did at quarterback last year with Mike Glennon and Mitch Trubisky. Within 6 weeks, he did the same thing at tight end with the $10 million guarantee for Deion Sims. And then coming back with Adam Shaheen in the second round. So I don't know. I mean, do you think he takes too lavish of an approach to fix weaknesses, or is that just kind of what you have to do and that's why they're weaknesses and you try and turn them into strengths?
Yeah, I think, you know, if you know that Mitch Trubisky is going to be your pick at number two and you're going to do whatever you can to get him, then as far as the Glennon thing, not a bad guy as a backup plan or as a placeholder, but not $16 million worth. I think you could have got a comparable player for half that, or probably less than half that. But at wide receiver, we've seen how injuries can decimate this crew. Last year, it was Kevin White getting hurt in the opener, Cam Meredith getting hurt in the preseason. Deion Sims is going to be strictly a blocking tight end, and Trey Burton is going to be the receiving part of that equation, and Adam Shaheen fits somewhere in the middle. But again, tight end, I think, at least in some recent years, has been the most injured position in all of the NFL. So you can't be too deep there. And I think, you know, as long as you have defined roles for all these guys, then it's okay. But, you know, a lot of money. They're paying all three of these guys, really, or they will be. All three of them like starters. I don't know if you can afford that. Now, they've got some great bargains on the roster. They're paying Tariq Cohen and Jordan Howard next to nothing. Sure. I think they have the lowest running back payroll in the NFL, so they had the money to spend. And you know, if you need an upgrade on offense, which was clearly what's been needed for the past 3 years, I don't think you can be criticized for going a little overboard to shore up that area.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And let me just apologize to listeners. We were having just a slight bit of technical difficulties there, but we're trying to work through it here. And Bob was sounding better at the end of that answer, so just kind of bear with us. We're taping this remotely in two separate locations. So, but that makes a lot of sense, Bob. I mean, if you're going to – and it gets back. I don't mean to kind of beat a dead horse here, but if you're going to hire Harry Hiestand and you feel so confident with putting the O-line in his hands – if you're going to make the offensive-minded hire with Matt Nagy and let him go out and get Mark Helfrich, get these kind of innovative offensive minds, then you feel better about some of the eggs you're putting in the offensive basket. Maybe if some of these moves occurred last year when you still got Dowell Loggins and John Fox and you're stuck in the 20th century of offense, you don't feel as good about it. So makes sense. And let me just reiterate, guys, Anthony Miller, not a huge guy, but he plays a lot bigger than his size. I'm so confident that Bears fans are going to quickly fall in love with him if they're not already super familiar with him. And there's a good chance that it could be one of those things where you're not thinking all that much about what was given up to get him. Certainly that would be a best case scenario. That's what Bears fans should hope for. Let's go back up to the top, Bob. Speaking of Bears players that I'm more than fairly confident that the fans are going to fall in love with, your early impressions of Roquan Smith, you were at Hallis Hall and had a chance to chat with him. I know you've seen plenty of his film. Just a great player, and I think, you know, to come in and join this franchise with this history of linebacker play, you kind of have to be a great player if you're not going to kind of drown in those expectations, right?
I think Arthur and Roquan Smith, the Bears have a guy who cannot wait to get out there and take advantage of this opportunity, looks forward to the challenge, and cannot also wait to prove people wrong who have the gall to consider him undersized. He really takes offense to that, and he points out that if you compare his size to the size of the leading tacklers in the NFL the past 3 or 4 years, he's almost the identical size, almost the identical weight and height, compares himself to Luke Kuechly, who's a little bit taller, but weighs 2 or 3 pounds more. And I've never heard anybody refer to Luke Kuechly as undersized. I don't think this guy is undersized either. And I think you're going to see him become the leading tackler on this Bears defense very early in his rookie season.
Yeah, I don't think he's undersized per se. And I have to ask, Bob, I didn't have the the luxury of being at Hallis Hall with you guys for all of draft weekend, but I have to know, was it One Hub Arkish who was asking Roquan Smith questions about his size or no?
Well, Hub and I both.
Okay. All
and, right. And because I think we both knew it would get a good response, and it did. So, yeah. He was, he wasn't really confrontational about it, but he wanted to make it clear that he is not undersized and he doesn't play like an undersized guy. He's not a finesse guy who's going to run around blockers to make tackles.
Right.
He's going to go right at you, and he's going to meet you at the point of impact, and more often than not, he's going
to
win.
All right, okay. I had to know. Here's what's so exciting about it to me. Again, I don't think he's undersized, but I think Luke Kuechly is a slightly different build. For me, I look at some of the modern-day prototypes. Someone like a Deion Jones, I think, is a great example just in terms of the body type and the play style. But, Bob, what's so awesome and what you just alluded to he's maybe a little bit smaller than some guys were accustomed to, certainly smaller than a Brian Urlacher years ago, of course, but he's not this is a guy who is going to stack and blow people up and not look to run around guys. So that, as you said, is what's so exciting about it. And it just is cool to see it, sort of this modern day prototype, the guy that has the speed and has the coverage ability, maybe something that's kind of been lacking from this Bears defense just a little bit. So, Roquan Smith is going to be what do you think about the leadership? What do you think about kind of just how articulate he was? I understand, is he an economics major? I think he's supposed to be a really impressive guy off the field too, Bob.
Yeah, I can't remember if it was econ or finance, but it was either one. He was definitely majored in something that I couldn't have got through college in less than 7 years, and he did it in 4, so good for him. And then the good thing is that intelligence carries over onto the field. He's not only classroom smart, he's got a high football IQ as well.
Yeah, no doubt about it. So, yeah, he's never going to be leaving the field, health willing, of course. And maybe that's a good segue. Let's just talk about whether there were risks. Bob, we got a couple minutes left on the Pro Football Weekly Chicago podcast. He's Bob Laguerre. I am Arthur Arkish. Check us out on iTunes. Please check out all of our podcasts while you are there. And what'd you think about the risk aversion for Ryan Pace in this draft? I mentioned at the top that I thought it was very refreshing to see him draft not only a great athlete, but a great football player. Now, that being said, James Daniels only available at number 39 because of the knee issues that some people knew about, some people didn't. Anthony Miller had some injury troubles during his time at Memphis, a little bit undersized. Kylie Fitz, I'll let you talk about him. We haven't gotten into him much yet. But just your thoughts about Pace's kind of approach when it comes to potential injury concerns, or whether you think that's overblown.
Yeah, I think, you could maybe say he rolled the dice a little bit on day three, but that's what day three is for. There's no such thing as a sixth-round bust. And to me, the most exciting pick of the draft was Kylie Fitz in round 6, because this guy had very low numbers. If you looked at his numbers, you'd be like, this guy's undraftable, maybe a priority free agent. But when he was healthy as a sophomore, I believe he had 7 sacks. He tested phenomenally at the combine, has everything you look for in an edge rusher, the straight-up speed, the ability to bend the corner, very strong guy, tested well in all the shuttle runs, the agility, everything like that. This is a guy who, he may not be a starter, he may not ever be a starter, but he may be a guy who comes in from day one and can have an effect and an impact on the game as a situational pass rusher. And if he can come in and get 6 or 8 sacks as a rookie, even though he doesn't start, that's a tremendous pick for the 6th round.
Yeah, no doubt. He flashed a little bit of mobile. I had a chance to watch him at the Senior Bowl, showed a little bit of bend, a little bit of, I think he had a nice counter move on his pass rush. I think he was using a spin move to help him close a little bit. That was pretty impressive as well. So, as you mentioned, there are some other dudes to, especially someone like Sam Acho, who can probably help you on early downs. They're looking for a little bit more juice when it comes to getting after the passer. Maybe Kylie Fitz fits the bill there. Bob, what'd you think about, so who haven't we talked about? You got Javon Wims in round 7, and you made a great point. There are no such thing as day 3 busts, but there are day 3 gems. That's where Ryan Pace has obviously done some of his best work, whether it was an injury risk on Eddie Jackson. Adrian Amos has given them great mileage. Of course, Jordan Howard, a 2-time Pro Bowler. So tell the listeners a little bit about, Javon Wims. And there's one guy whose name is escaping me that we haven't talked about as well.
We're seeing the defensive end from Delaware, Bilal Nichols.
There you go.
Maybe, you know, you always question a guy who comes from having played against a lesser level of competition, but this guy is going to have an opportunity to win the starting job at right end. The Bears are set at left end with Akeem Hicks and at nose with Eddie Goldman, but that other end is wide open. They want Jonathan Bullard to win it, and he may be able to, but he needs to be a lot more consistent. So Bilal Nichols is a guy that will be in the mix, and even if he doesn't win the starting job, should certainly play in a rotation at that other end spot. And then I see that being a job that could be shared by 2 or 3 guys this season. He could be one of them. And as far as Javon Wims, the 7th-round pick from Georgia, played on a pretty good team and led them in receiving. So he's a guy with good size, not tremendously sudden or with great speed, but showed that he can make tough catches. He can make catches over the middle. He can catch contested balls, has a good wingspan, good catching radius. So, again, with Allen Robinson coming back slowly from the injury, he will have opportunities in training camp and probably in the preseason to show that he belongs and could possibly factor in as a slot receiver, if nothing else, in the early going.
Do you think he's going to be competing maybe for the same roster spot, Bob, as Kevin White? How do you sort of see, we've talked about the influx of wide receiver talent. We've talked about some of the hard luck that White and others have dealt with in recent years. What do you think that depth chart is going to, I don't want to ask you to predict it now here on May 7th, but, how many slots are there going to be for all this, all these newcomers aboard?
Well, just with the investment they have financially in Kevin White, they're going to give him every opportunity to be that guy,
right,
and to play like a first rounder. Matt Nagy seemed like he was really gung-ho on, getting him going and having him live up to his potential. He said, you know, that would be a great thing for us if we could come in and get this guy healthy and finally get him to play like he's capable of playing. And as he did in college at West Virginia, which is why he was the 7th overall pick.
Right.
And, you know, I don't know that he's ever going to live up to that 7th overall pick. I kind of doubt it at this point. And I still think he's a little bit raw as a route runner, because that was his, that was the big negative on him coming out of college. And he just hasn't played or practiced enough to become much better at that. But I think he will be given every opportunity just because of the investment they have in him. And they know if he's healthy, he's a threat. A guy that big and that fast definitely puts pressure on a defense. So, you know, Javon Wims to me is a guy who probably will make the final 53 as a 5th or maybe a 6th wide receiver if they keep that many. And I don't know that he's going to contribute a great deal as a rookie, but like I said, he's going to have some opportunities to take advantage of in the early going.
Bob, I know there's no cheering in the press box, and we'll talk about Kevin White a lot more between now and the season and once we get into the season and so on and so forth, but I'll just put it this way. I would not be at all disappointed to see the guy succeed. I hear people on Twitter that want to take shots at Kevin White and suggest that his his days are numbered in Chicago, and that, you know, that very well could be. That's probably even a strong likelihood, but Kevin White didn't ask for any of this, and it would be cool to get to see him try and put it all together and try and harness some of that rare talent that made him the 7th overall pick in the draft a couple years ago. On the way out, again, he's Bob LeGarre. I'm Arthur Rex. A couple minutes left on the Pro Football Focus Chicago podcast, and thank you for dealing with some of our technical difficulties today. Guys, look, there's just not enough time for us to work in the offseason. It's the new CBA. All these limitations, it's affecting us too. So thanks for humoring us, and we will get better. We're just trying to improve every day. So, Bob, any UDFAs that caught your eye? It seems like the Bears had some success. I don't think they've made any of these signings official yet, unless I missed them. But anything that you can tell the listeners about the undrafted class and anyone who's going to have an outside shot to help?
Nobody right now who jumps off the page is like, this guy's got an opportunity, but I guarantee you that When the rookie minicamp starts on Friday, after the very first practice, there will be somebody out there who just absolutely looks like he belongs on an NFL roster and looks like he's going to be a guy to watch in training camp, whether it's a Daniel Braverman type guy or whoever. There's always somebody in that first rookie minicamp who lights it up and everybody notices. And, you know, I'm not sure who that's going to be, but I guarantee you there will be at least one guy like that.
And we know, guys, Ryan Pace has done well in that avenue of team building, whether it's Cameron Meredith or I believe Bryce Callahan as well. He has found some contributors. And one name I'll throw out there, again, none of this is official yet, but it sounds like from reports that Kevin Tolliver, the LSU cornerback, has signed on with the Bears. And I think both his talent level and the kind of level of need for the Bears after punting on the position outside of re-signing homegrown guys, I will say Kevin Tolliver is one name to keep an eye on, and Bob Legere will be keeping both eyes on all these guys at Halas Hall this weekend, so we'll be talking about it more next week. That's going to do it. We're going to bring Hub Arkish onto the podcast next, but Bob Legere, thank you once again for all the great insights, and we'll look forward to doing this again next week.
Okay, thanks a lot, Arthur.
What's up, everyone? I am pleased to be joined now on the Pro Football Weekly Chicago podcast by Hub Arkish. He follows Bob Legere and I know has lots of thoughts about the Bears draft class as well. But Hub, before we get there, the first Bears draft pick, Roquan Smith, got himself in a little bit of a pickle already. Why don't you tell the listeners what's going on there and if there's any real reason to be concerned?
Well, apparently he is back in Athens at the University of Georgia, and his car was broken into. And in his car, amongst some of his own personal possessions, I guess his Georgia football helmet, some things that relate to his career there, he had a brand new iPad given to him by the Chicago Bears, which is basically his playbook. And that's a big deal. Now, you know, the issue is who stole it? Do they know what they have? I would guess that there is probably some kind of security on that iPad in terms of passwords to get into the playbook, but it really just depends on whose hands it ends up in and how sophisticated they are and understand what they have. If, in fact, the Bears' playbook became public knowledge, that's a big deal, and that's a huge problem. I have to believe this is a young man who comes with no red flags. This is a young man who has not had any off-the-field issues, a high-character kid, so I think it's just awful luck, and I'm sure that the Chicago Bears are extremely unhappy about it, but it's pretty hard to come down on Roquan Smith. It doesn't appear that he's done anything wrong here. Certainly my hope is that the car was locked, and I assume it was, but those details remain to be released.
I believe, Hub, it was the Chicago Tribune that had this story first. That's where I saw it initially on Monday morning, late morning, I believe it was. There are all kinds of jokes here. If this was Mitch Trubisky last year and his playbook got stolen, I think Bears fans would celebrate. Vic Fangio's playbook is, you know, it's kind of cut and dry, but obviously it's not something he wants out there. Bears fans, you know, top concern, not even concern, but what they should be focused on is how quickly Roquan Smith can master the playbook. I'm sure the rest of this is much ado about nothing. We got lots of other stuff to get to. We haven't heard from you on this here podcast with your overall draft thoughts. So I've gotten Legere's take on what I think has been roundly praised nationally, Ryan Pace's work in the draft last week. But just your very general thoughts before I have a few more specific questions for you.
Well, I think they had a pretty good draft. I definitely like the first three picks. I am somewhat intrigued by Kylie Fitz, I want to say in the sixth round.
Yep.
You know, an interesting pick there. Beyond that, you know, we'll see. You know, I think they clearly reached for Ibinowe. I'm sorry, I've got it down, and I've been practicing it so much I've forgotten now, but I'm not wild about that pick in the fourth round. Obviously, there wasn't one in the third round. You know, Bilal Nichols is an interesting kid, so I think they had a pretty good draft. You know, I think it pretty much is going to focus on those first three picks. You know, obviously you're not thrilled about now going into next year with no second round pick, But in essence, if Anthony Miller becomes the player you think he can be, you just got him a year early, so you can't really feel too bad about that. When you look at the trade up last year to get Mitch Trubisky, those two threes and a four were lost picks that you got no value from, other than moving up one spot, which you might not have had to. You have to realize that this year, while they did give up a second, they got to use that pick in this draft. And so in that regard, I don't have a lot of issues with it. I think overall, their second greatest need was interior offensive line play. I feel strongly that James Daniels has to end up at center and that Cody Whitehair should end up at guard, which is what they said they drafted Cody Whitehair for after he played left tackle at Kansas State for 4 years. Now, being all rookie as a center 2 seasons ago, you know, I suppose complicates that a little bit. But I think they're just feeling their way now, and they're going to realize that guard is going to be Whitehair's best position, that the center is the best spot for Daniels. So that feels like a really good pick. Roquan Smith is a kid who comes with no red flags, as I said. You know, he is an upgrade over Kwiatkowski. Kwiatkowski becomes number three right now. If you can keep Danny Trevathan on the field, I'm sure the goal was to get Vic Fangio his latest model of the Patrick Willis Navarro Bowman duo that he had in San Francisco when they were both Pro Bowlers and one or both All Pros over a 3 or 4 year stretch. So, you feel good about that. I don't know that it was a great need, though. I thought going into the draft, their greatest need was pass rush, and they did not address that. Yeah, you got Kylie Phipps in the sixth round. You'll see what you got, but that's not exactly addressing your biggest need. I thought another significant need was at left tackle, where I am just not sold that Charles Leno is the answer. That not addressed as well. I think the secondary they pretty much took care of by signing their own in free agency. Depending on what kind of players these kids become, we will forever watch the parallel paths of Minkah Fitzpatrick, who I think would have been a great fit and answered the need for the Bears at safety next to Eddie Jackson. I'm just not sold on Adrian Amos as being a difference maker back there. Will he have a better career than Roquan Smith? I think he would be very good at inside linebacker. Yeah, that's something we'll keep an eye on.
You mentioned a couple prospects specifically, or at least Minkah Fitzpatrick. I'd throw Derwin James in there as well, although obviously NFL teams weren't quite as high on him as some of us in the media ended up falling all the way to 18 in the Chargers, and I thought was the best value pick in the whole first round. But as far as positions, Hub, that went unaddressed, you did mention the pass rush outside. How big of a concern is it? I mean, I know Bears fans kind of lamented together the fact that there was no other pass rusher to kind of help out Leonard Floyd, potentially Aaron Lynch and Sam Acho. The board just didn't fall that way, but does that rank as kind of your number one concern, if not for the entire team, for the defense entering 2018 now?
Well, it's definitely my number one concern. I know what the Bears are hoping the answers are. Whenever you discuss the subject with Ryan Pace, one of the first things he brings up is that they get a real nice push from Akeem, which is true. But rarely can you count on a five technique, an interior defensive lineman, to be one of your leading pass rushers. I mean, he's done an outstanding job getting 7 and 8 sacks the last 2 seasons, but that's a max value there. That's not the answer. If Leonard Floyd becomes the player that they thought they were drafting when they traded up to get him at number 9 overall, that's a big part of the answer, because then you've got a double-digit sack guy, but he's got to prove he can stay on the football field after only being there for all 10 games his first 2 seasons. They've added Aaron Lynch, who was a very promising pass rusher as a rookie and a second-year player in San Francisco, but then he kind of disappeared. He is somebody who in college had some off-the-field stuff, so we'll see how that plays out. Sam Acho is an excellent option as basically your third outside backer in a rotation. And I think that he is the equivalent of a starter. He'll get plenty of playing time. But again, he's not a pass rush specialist. And so no doubt in my mind that they need another top pass rusher. When Pernell McPhee and Lamar Houston and Willie Young all leave at the same time, all of whom were supposed to be principal pass rushers for you, and you haven't replaced them, but you know that that's a need. So I guess you could argue Aaron Lynch and Kylie Phipps, the rookie in the sixth round, could be that replacement, but that's really, betting on a long shot. So I think you have to worry about that. And then, as I said, I just don't think they're good enough at left tackle And, you know, you do have Jordan Morgan, who was a four-year starter at left tackle at Kutztown State, who was on IR last year after being drafted in the fifth round, but they drafted him to play guard. And he's kind of the forgotten man when we talk about the guard position, as well as Eric Kush coming back. So, you know, I think those are your two biggest concerns. If they can find the pass rush from people on the roster, Isaiah Irving was playing some outside linebacker late last year. He runs well, but usually in a 3-4 defense, that pass rush specialist on the outside is a much bigger player than he is. You know, so I think that it's got to be your number one concern going into training camp, unless they address it with some more street free agents, but there's no big time pass rusher still out there on the street.
Hub, your thoughts on Ryan Pace's sort of construction of his offensive line? It seems pretty clear to me that he's an inside out type of builder. We saw it with the Saints and Drew Brees. We've seen it under Matt Nagy in both Philadelphia and Kansas City. Although, in fairness, they spent a lot in both of those spots, too, on the likes of Lane Taylor and, of course, Mitchell Schwartz and Eric Fisher. But your thoughts on Ryan Pace prioritizing guard more? And do you feel like standing pat with Charles Leno and Bobby Massey in some ways is a bet on Harry Hiestand finding another level of production for them as much as it is on betting on those two players?
You know, Harry Hiestand is widely regarded as one of the best offensive line coaches in football. He was highly thought of in the NFL in his last stint with the Bears, extremely highly thought of in his time at Notre Dame, where he's developed both Nick and Zach Martin, you know, now Mike McClinchy, now Quentin Nelson, and several other, you know, top offensive linemen. So, I think that you feel good about that. The other thing that I would point out to Bears fans is that Bobby Massey has actually been a little bit underrated. He got here as a free agent and struggled big time the first 7-8 games. But then he really started to play much better football. And, you know, he's still not going to be the best in pass protection, but if you get him a little help, he's okay. And he's a very solid run blocker, can be a road grader out there. So I think they're okay at right tackle. At left tackle, this is a little-known fact, but Charles Leno led the NFL in false starts last year. He was one of the leaders in the NFL amongst offensive linemen and penalties total. And in every game, there's one or two plays where he just gets beat on the snap and his quarterback almost gets killed, you know. And I haven't seen any improvement in that. I was a little surprised when the Bears did the extension early last year. But if you look at the extension, it wasn't outrageous money. So it's not as if that's a cap killer and they can't replace him. I believe that Bradley Soule, who played some guard last year, but really is a tackle, is back as the swing tackle. Also, Earl Watford, who they signed from Arizona, can play both guard and tackle. But these aren't guys who you can project out as an upgrade at left tackle over Leno. So to me, you know, finding that really, you know, maybe you're not going to get a top guy, but at least someone who is much more trustworthy than Leno is almost as big a priority as finding more pass rush.
It's almost ironic, Hub, with all the, you know, the emphasis put clearly from Pace and Nagy and the Bears fans have picked up on it, all the emphasis on sort of improving Mitch Trubisky's surroundings entering year two. To stand pat with Leno. And I'm not trying to pretend this wasn't a great tackle draft, and you can't really find starting left tackles in free agency unless you're willing to set records like the, you know, the Giants did with Nate Solder, obviously. So I'm not pretending there were easy solutions. And I think Charles Leno is passable at times as well, but just something that maybe we shouldn't gloss over as much as we have as we're throwing, you know, bouquets around in Trubisky's improved arsenal. We'll have to wait and see what his blocking is like on the edges. It will be interesting. Hub, are there a couple holdovers that, you know, have sort of a new lease on life after this draft, maybe thought that their positions were going to receive a little bit more competition? I guess that as I'm saying this, as I'm spitballing here, I think the obvious start is Adrian Amos. Who else? Guys that really should feel maybe a little bit more secure than they did a couple weeks ago at this time.
Yeah, let me just add on Leno. Obviously, the Bears think more highly of him than I do.
For sure.
You know, they're not as concerned about it. The guy that intrigued me was the kid from Oregon, Terrell Crosby, who I thought was going to go late in the first, certainly in the second round.
Right.
Lasted into fifth round for the Detroit Lions, and I now find out that there was a number of teams had bad medicals on him. And so there was a number of offensive linemen with shaky medicals this year, and it wasn't a great year. We should acknowledge that, is that if you're going to fix it in the draft, this may not have been the year to do it. And so second lease on life, start with Jay Leno, or I should say Charles Leno, of course.
Yeah.
I didn't do that on purpose. I'd like to say I did, but that one just slipped out on me. It starts with Charles Leno, who I really thought minimally was going to get competition if not replaced. I think that you have to obviously look at Adrian Amos and also right next to him, Bryce Callahan. You know, a lot of people thought that the Bears would draft a cornerback high. They didn't draft one at all.
Right.
And so Callahan, who was a non-tendered, well, he was tendered, but the low tender offer to come back for another year to be in the slot, it would appear that he's safe right now. Marcus Cooper is back, and I think that was a really wise move. But I'm not sure that any of those three, Fuller, Amukamara, or Cooper, is a great fit in the slot. I think some other guys on the roster who go back to Ryan Pace's second draft, those two fourths and the fifth, Deion Bush at safety, DeAndre Hall, who's played both corner and safety, and then DeAndre Houston Carson, all three of those guys look like roster casualties and now will come in and compete. I would think at least two of them will probably, you know, make the team again. So that's a few. You know, a lot of people thought that Deion Sims would be gone. Obviously, he's not going to be gone. The first three tight ends are going to be Deion Sims, Trey Burton, and Adam Shaheen, not necessarily in that order. And then Bilal Nichols, I think, is probably going to be looked at as a five technique. But where they got him in the fifth round, he's kind of a project. So, you know, guys like Roy Robertson Harris and Jonathan Bullard are probably feeling a little more secure in their spots.
Yep, you took the words right out of my mouth. I think Jonathan Bullard, for sure, the time is now for him. And Roy Robertson Harris, in a lot of ways, is even more intriguing, actually, and is, given the pedigree and what you would expect from him, is maybe flashed even a little bit more than Bullard. So some interesting names there to keep an eye on. And you know, he wasn't a household name, and he didn't do flashy things. But Mitch Unrein, a pretty good football player, good get for the Buccaneers, and the Bears do have to find an adequate replacement plan. So it's something we'll be keeping an eye on here at the Pro Football Weekly Chicago podcast. He's Hub Arkish. I am Arthur Arkish. Just a few minutes left. And one more reminder to check us out on iTunes. Make sure you're subscribed to us over there. And one more reminder as well that there are 10 days left in our Team for the Ages contest. You have an opportunity to vote on the best imaginable 50-player roster of the modern era. And we're going to send someone to Atlanta next February for the big game just for playing. So still time to get in on that fun. Hub, last one for you. I think this is still fun too. I'm kind of stuck in mock draft mode. I think that's understandable given how many of them we cranked out, but it's always fun to put our GM caps on, and especially when you're, you know, playing the part of Ryan Pace. He's been very aggressive. He has left no stone unturned in trying to upgrade his roster. What about some potential edge trade targets? Do you think that maybe someone like a Shane Ray, who seems like he has kind of fallen out of favor in Denver, Bradley Chubb there now. What about even Dante Fowler Jr. didn't have his option picked up? Is there anyone that fans can maybe get excited about as a possibility? We've seen Ryan Pace bring in, whether it's Dontrell Inman or you know, there are other names that are escaping me now, but Pace has used the trade market pretty aggressively, and I'm just wondering if there might still be an upgrade out there that we don't know about yet.
Well, it's always a possibility. You know, I don't know. I think the reason that Shane Ray has fallen out of favor is that he hasn't played all that well. I mean, he's shown flashes. It's kind of him and Coney Healy, you know, guys from the same place with the same story.
Oh, come on, Hub.
What?
Why are you going in on my Tigers? Give me a break, man.
Well, Coney Healy's available, too. I looked at both coming out of school, and that's the point, is their games just didn't, or at least to this point, haven't translated as well to the National Football League. But
right.
I believe, you know, Coney Ealy, I think you can get for nothing. And Shane Ray, you probably would give up a fifth or sixth round pick. But I think we have to acknowledge that the reason they're available is they haven't become the players we expected them to be when they went in the first couple rounds. Dante Fowler Jr. is interesting because, you know, this guy is, what, the fifth overall pick in the draft, but he tears that ACL before he even gets into a mini camp.
Yeah.
And has never, you know, become the player that anybody expected. And you almost wonder there, you know, is that me or is he 100% physically? So You know, there's going to be players out there. You can always make a move like that. We remember that that's where, you know, basically, you know, when Ryan Pace found Akiem Hicks, nobody knew what he had. And now he's got one of the best five techniques in football. You've mentioned the likely suspects, so it's one we'll keep an eye on. I know that they are really excited about Leonard Floyd. I don't know how they ignore the fact that, you know, he's only been able to last 60, 70% of the season his first 2 years. But if Leonard Floyd is the player they thought that he was going to be, and if Akiem Hicks just continues to play the way he has the last 2 years, you still need more, but now the situation is not as dire as you thought it was. And then what if Aaron Lynch becomes the kind of pass rusher you thought he was going to be? And the only reason I'm doing this again is because now when you start talking about a Coney Ealy or a Shane Ray, you're a Dante Fowler, how much better options are they than what they currently have on the roster? I think adding one or two of those players to the mix would be a good idea, but whether or not that's on Ryan Pace's mind, I couldn't really say.
And we should mention, I believe Lamar Houston is sitting out there unsigned still. Obviously, they know him well. They apparently knew him well enough to think that he was expendable, not someone in the 2018 cards, but probably shouldn't completely rule out the possibility of him being a candidate to return. I think Willie Young is still unsigned too, but obviously he's coming off the season-ending injury, and I believe is a year or two older. So, but he's a younger version of what 31 or whatever he is, just because a little bit of a late bloomer. Hub, just on the way out, we appreciate all the Bears knowledge. I know you're a night owl, and I'm guessing you were up into the 14th inning last night. Five in a row, I believe, for the Cubs, the losing streak is at. Do we have to worry? I know it's only May 7th, but what's going on with our boys here?
Well, you're getting even with me for the Missouri comment?
it hurts me to ask that question, too, for what it's worth, well, but yes.
I want to pat ourselves on the back, really more, you know, Greg Gabriel and Nolan Naraki in our draft history at Pro Football Weekly. But we said when those kids were coming out that we thought Marcus Golden might be the best of the bunch. And he has turned out to be an invaluable player. I think Marcus Golden's got some Pro Bowl potential. So it's not the school. It's a couple of kids who didn't work out. As far as, you know, somebody's got to explain to me, and I want to be careful here because I'm guessing it might have just been an innings thing. But I'm watching that game, and I see Pedro Strop and Luke Farrell in the bullpen. And I understood why Farrell was warming up when the score was tied. But after Baez hits the home run, I don't care how many innings he's got on his arm, you need that win. What are you sending Farrell out for Strope? I had a horrible feeling about that. You know, and then, you know, I want to get mad at Baez for the ridiculous throwing error, but he made an incredible play to stop the ball. And you know, Farrell, I just didn't understand why he was on the mound at that point. So, yeah, you know, it was kind of gut-wrenching. And I'm sorry, I love some things that Joe Maddon does, but when it comes to how he handles his pitchers, I just don't think he's very good.
But what worries you the most at this point? And this will be literally the last question. We only got a minute left or so here. The bats, I mean, will they warm up with the weather? The defense that was historically good last year and has really struggled. The starting rotation has not yet been as advertised. What's correctable and what might linger, if anything? Hopefully nothing.
Yeah. To be honest, I'm not worried about anything. The talent is the talent,
yeah.
You know, and at some point they're going to play. I was never a big fan of the Yu Darvish signing, and so I don't know that that's going to work out the way they hoped. But even if it doesn't, this is a team that's going to contend, and this is a team with or without Yu Darvish that you'd probably argue has a better starting five and a better lineup than the Cardinals or the Brewers, and that's how it proved out last year. It took until after the All-Star break, and my guess is it will again. I mean, the good news is that Baez, while he's struggling in the field a little bit, is hitting the way he is. Good news is Kyle Schwarber may be turning into the Kyle Schwarber they thought they were going to have. You know, Rizzo and Bryant are going to be okay, and Contreras is going to hit better. And actually, the bullpen was otherworldly. I mean, you know, they got him to the 14th inning. So right. I think Cubs fans just have to be a little patient, but it certainly is frustrating when you see stuff like last night.
There you have it, guys. That's Hub Arkish. He's talking Chicago Cubs, Missouri Tigers, and we even sprinkled in a little bit of Chicago Bears for you here on the PFW Chicago Podcast. Thanks so much for being with us, Hub. Thank you to the listeners, to our producer, Dan Mott, to everyone. We'll be back next week, a little bit more regular frequency for you all headed into the offseason. We're having a lot of fun with this podcast, so thanks for being with us, and we'll talk to you again next week on the Pro Football Weekly Chicago Podcast. I'm joined, as always, by Bob Laguerre, my partner in crime. I'm Hub Ark. Pretty sure I screwed that one up. All right, hold on 1 minute. My goodness.
No way. Was this garbage.